Here we go.
I'm independent.
Happy Friday to all 11 of you. It is Radio Free Weir with Rob Babcock, and joining us today, as he does on Fridays, is James Dom to help us do the list.
List, James.
Woo. The list today is brought to you by Web Bixby. Web Bixby donated $50 just to hear us say his amazing name at the beginning of the podcast. So, Web, thank you so much for that.
So I don't know if I've ever told you guys this, but back in 88, I used to have a magic show I did. It was a big hit. I did this one trick that everybody seemed to like where I'd take large amounts of marijuana and cocaine and then make them disappear. Ta-da. It was a lot of smoke and mirrors. I'm not going to lie to you.
Walked into it.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to allow it.
I'm going to allow it. We're going to go to the judges. Judges say that's okay.
It's okay. I mean,
they roll big joints too.
Even the Russian judge, he's okay with it. So we're doing the Friday list today. The list is what?
The list is best movie soundtrack.
Best movie soundtrack of all time. And we made sure, because people have been complaining, that we would keep the Beatles off of this list, even though I think that's unfair. It's fine. We aren't going to do Hard Day's Night. We're not going to do Help. We're going to try to stick to soundtracks with artists that where the soundtrack isn't just one artist and it's not just for a movie or to promote that artist or an album like A Hard Day's Night or Help or Magical Mystery Tour.
Also no musicals.
Also no musicals, which darn... Because you know what huge
Pirates
fans
of Penzance
all of us are.
Was like.
All right, crossing off my list: Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Yeah, yeah.
And Fiddler on the Roof.
I mean, I am still putting Les Miserables because to me, it's more than a musical.
Yeah, it's a steaming pile of shit.
Hey, that one song that whore sang is really good. I'm sorry, that is a good song.
She wasn't.
And that whore could sing.
She wasn't a whore. She was an unfortunate.
She was a whore. She took money for sex.
Well, but she didn't wanna.
Oh, right. True. I forgot. And that's all that matters.
She sold her hair first.
Yeah. She and her teeth.
She didn't make a living out of it. It was a one. It was for Cosette. Leave Fantine alone.
Okay, all right. For the love of God, hold on. I'm so glad I have my soundboard set up again so I can do this. All right, so the list is best soundtrack from a movie. If you've never heard of
the
radioist the list before,
thing I've ever heard,
right? Yeah. If you've never heard us do the list before, we get 16 of something, though I'm sure we'll probably go over that today. And then we vote on which one is the best.
We know. Let's get on with it.
All right. Well, I always start this, so I'm going to let one of you guys start. Which one wants to start?
I'll go.
Okay, go ahead. What's your first one?
I'm going to jump right out of the gate with one of my favorite movies and a very solid contender for the winner. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with American Graffiti.
American Graffiti. Hold
You're
on.
You're talking about a 2-CD set of like 40 songs.
We don't have American Graffiti on this list.
You're such a jackass.
We have 26 songs that James prepped.
American Graffiti is a great movie.
Really, that's up to you.
Okay, American Graffiti is a great movie, and the soundtrack is about a 10-year span from 1954 to like 1964 of amazing hits.
Uh-huh. Like all I know is it's George Lucas and there's no lightsabers.
It is weird though that George Lucas made this movie, and few people know that was the original prequel to the Star Wars movies.
It was.
Yeah. Yeah.
After wrecking his 55 Chevy, Han Solo left and wonder,
here you go. Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing soundtrack.
The monotone.
If you like the 50s and early 60s music, it is like the best collection of those. I mean, everything from, you know, Chuck Berry and Beach Boys and all that stuff. Just Buddy Holly, everything you can think of.
and has a cameo by my personal radio hero, somebody I've tried to emulate throughout my career, Howlin' Jack.
You mean Wolfman Jack?
I meant the Wolfman Jack. Yeah, yeah, Howlin' Wolfman Jack. That's his name.
He's awesome.
He's really good.
At the end of this movie, I watched this movie the first time when I was a kid with my father, which was weird because my father lived this damn movie. And like, it was one of those things. He was, you know, like all into it, and we watched it together, and I loved the music and the cars and all the stuff. And at the end of the movie, they play the song Green Onions by Booker T and the MGs, which is one of my favorites. And it's an instrumental. There's no singing in the song. And I remember like saying to my dad, this song is great. What's this song? He's like, you know, I don't know the name. I'm like, don't you lie to me, old man. You have known every damn song this whole movie. Sang along to most of them. What's the name of this song? And he's like, I don't know. It drove me nuts for years until I found out that it was Green Onions.
So, fun fact. Yeah. I think I mentioned a while ago, I went to the Rock and Soul Museum when I was in Memphis last. Booker T and the MGs.
Yeah, I was just giving Rod crap last night about not having gone to Memphis because I know you would love it.
Yeah, I know I would.
Yeah.
So what were you saying?
Booker T and the MGs were like the house band for Stax Records.
Yeah, they were. Right, I forgot about that.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and no, if you go there, there's a whole thing about Green Onions, too.
Oh, kick ass.
And the majority of those guys are in the Blues Brothers bands.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, look at
Steve,
that.
Steve Cropper, Donald Dunn. I think they kicked around the idea of having Booker T play keyboards, and then originally it was Paul Schaefer with the Blues Brothers band, but he couldn't be it in right. the movie, so they had Murph of Murph and the Magic Tones.
Yes,
because if we were doing musicals, Blues Brothers would have made this list.
Mm-hmm.
The original
a lot of those songs are them.
Blues Brothers band was the SNL band, which was Paul Schaefer.
Paul Schaefer, yeah. God, does anybody remember the guy in the 80s and 90s who was the lead on
the Saturday Night Live band?
I don't know what it was about that man, but he bothered me.
He bothered everyone.
He was just
hideous. He was an amazing guitar player, but just a jackass playing it.
And yeah, he just always had that look of like, look what I'm doing. Like, yeah, okay, so you're
Eddie
a great
Van
guitar
Halen.
Player. Yeah, there's no need to be smug. Like, you're the house band for SNL, okay?
Yeah.
It was the Eddie Van Halen look. But he was the lead player for Hall & Oates.
Really?
Yep.
Was okay. he really? I did not know that.
G.E. Smith was the lead guitar player for Hall & Oates.
All right. So, yeah. You should have stayed there instead of ruining my Saturday nights with his hideous face.
All right. Pick number one is American Graffiti.
American Graffiti for best soundtrack. James, you go with the next one.
Okay. I'm going to go with one that kind of, as an older teenager, kind of jumped out at me and maybe introduced me to some 60s stuff that I may not have totally been into otherwise. I'm going to go with the Rushmore soundtrack.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
And I'm going to go with Ooh La La, which closes out the movie.
I was going to say, that was the reason I went out and found that soundtrack.
And the interesting thing about it is it's a Faces song, and generally Rod Stewart sung Faces songs.
But he did
not
sing
this one.
He did not. It was Ronnie Wood, who would later be with the Rolling Stones, yeah. who sang it, and it's much, much better than if Rod Stewart had sung it.
It's much better than any Rod Stewart song ever. And I say that as one of Rod Stewart's biggest fans. Sorry, I was just coughing ejaculate out of my mouth. I'm sorry.
It happens. Working radio.
Yeah. it's part of the job.
Boom, boom, boom. I worked in radio for 12 years. All I ever got was shit on my face.
you didn't open your mouth. That was your problem. And this is one of the songs, too. It was on the Rushmore soundtrack, which is why people like us then went out and were like, oh, my God, that song's great. And then remember, like a year later, it was everywhere. It was like in commercials.
Yeah.
It made it back into rotation on all the classic rock stations. This was not in any way, shape or form a hit for them when it came out.
And I had never heard the song before seeing that movie. And then, like you said, after seeing the movie, I went, dude, I got to get that song. And I couldn't find it because I didn't look up Ooh La La.
Right.
I'm looking up poor old granddad. Yeah, poor old granddad. You know, wish that I knew now, and, you know, and all these things. And yeah, never could find it or who did it. Went out and found the soundtrack. Was like, you got to be kidding me. Ooh La La.
Yeah. Another very notable addition to that soundtrack was this song right here by Cat Stevens, The Wind, which after it was on the Rushmore soundtrack, then there was a deal was struck with Yusuf Islam a la Cat Stevens that if there was a sad point in any movie, this song had to play between the years of 1998 and 2005.
It does seem that way, doesn't it?
Oh, my God. It was in every goddamn song. Or every movie, I mean. No, it was in songs, too. If you had a song, sad song.
The bridge had to be this.
Yeah, the wind is only like a minute and a half long. So you would stop, play The Wind, and then go back to the song. It was everywhere.
Like, he was like Pitbull. All the songs were like featuring Cat Stevens.
Pitbull, Cat Stevens. See, it's a yin-yang type of thing. All right,
There was Danger Mouse.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That was uncalled for.
It was good. It was fine.
Interesting cartoon.
I used to love that cartoon.
I am gonna go with a heavy hitter for my first pick because it is a great soundtrack and a director who is known for he really focuses on how important. The music is to the movie. It's Goodfellas.
Jimmy Conway cleaning up the Lufthansa job.
Yeah.
Just dead bodies everywhere.
Oh my God, the scene. Right.
The Cadillac and the the whole thing. Just body after body.
Do 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 do. See, instrumental coda from Layla, but there's so many good songs. On that soundtrack, there was Rags to Riches. It went by decade.
Almost chronologically,
it started off in the 50s. Yeah.
That's one thing he does with his soundtracks is not only is it like this great mood setter, it's also very much of whatever time the film is taking place. Like, very much. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Hey, hold on. I have a Boy Scout at my door. Talk amongst yourselves.
Have a Boy Scout. I told you, come back after 6.
When you leave the bait out, they're going to come, John.
Hey, like, hey man. Have a Boy Scout at my door. Oh, that's funny.
Goodfellas is a little impressed because there's only one Rolling Stones song because Martin Scorsese loves him some Rolling Stones.
He is a huge Stones fan. He did a film that's like a concert footage called Lightning in a Bottle.
Mm-hmm.
It is fantastic. It's all blues and stuff, and it is such a good film. Like I said, it's not a movie. It's a concert film.
Right.
But it is really cool. It was one of those things that after I watched it and then I found out he directed it, I was like, oh, my God, really?
All right, so...
Told him to come back after Mom and Dad go to sleep.
I just gave him some weed and told him to go have fun.
Well, it's
legal here. So it's okay. Yeah, I mean, not for him, but anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, Goodfellas had a lot of great songs. It had obviously Layla. It had Gimme Shelter, Jump in the Fire by Nilsson. Nilsson.
That's great because it's Henry coked out of his mind and paranoid about the helicopter.
Yes.
Yeah.
What is
Life
by George
Harrison?
Which
is pretty much
what
was going on when Nilsson wrote the song.
Pretty much what was going on in Nilsson's life from the age of 8.
His dad left. He had a rough childhood.
Oh, right. If my dad had left, I'd have been a lot happier.
Well, maybe right, Harry had a good dad.
If he had a good dad, why did he leave? Yeah. All right. Back to Rod. Rod, your next pick.
For my next pick, I'm going to get away from some of this classic rock stuff. Did you ever see a film called Judgment Night?
Yes.
It's not really a great movie. It's okay.
I don't care about the movie. I wasn't happy that you mentioned the movie so much. I mean, Dennis Leary.
Yeah, it's okay. It's not a great movie.
I caught such a cool concept a while ago, and it was just really, really ridiculous.
There's a stupid scene where they go up and there's these kids in land, and it's like 1 o'clock in the morning, and there's kids in the projects playing on the playground. And he walks up and he's like, you know, hey, we're looking for these guys. They come through here. And he hands this kid money. And the money's got blood all over it because someone was shot holding the money. And the kid goes, man, I don't want that money. It's got blood on it. And Dennis Leary looks at him and goes, you ever seen money that didn't?
Ooh.
And I remember like it was supposed to be this poignant thing, and I remember thinking, that was the dumbest damn line ever.
Ooh, that's the no, man, because all capitalism is built on whatever.
Yeah.
All right, so
the point is really dumb though. Like there's this like confrontation between Dennis Leary and Emilio Estevez, which is in itself, I think, the funniest sentence I've ever said. There's like a broken staircase, and like Emilio Estevez thinks he has Dennis Leary bested. Spoiler alert, y'all, in case you were really, really waiting in the weeds to watch Judgment Night. And so Emilio, he thinks he's got Dennis Leary bested, and there's like a broken staircase railing. And instead of like shoving Emilio Estevez through this hole, like Dennis Leary decides to like grab him and pull him to his doom with him. Which, I don't know. It was dumb.
Whatever.
It was dumb, and I caught the end of it. And
but the concept for the movie was really interesting. For the soundtrack, I mean, was really
ahead of its time,
You the soundtrack was great.
You had these alternative rock bands like Dino Jr. and Pearl Jam and Sonic Youth, and then you paired them up with these rappers, What's really cool about it is that they didn't use, like, I guess they could have used more popular rappers, but they used good rappers.
Absolutely.
So you have, like, Dino Jr. With Del the Funky Homo Sapien, which is fucking awesome. Teenage Fan Club and De La Soul.
De La Soul is such a good...
Yeah.
Cypress Hill did two tracks, one with Pearl Jam and one with Sonic
Youth. Sonic Youth, right. Here's the Pearl Jam one.
Great. Both of them are great.
There you go. I love in any rap collaboration, you have to mention the person you're collaborating with. Otherwise, they don't get credit.
Pearl Jam.
Yeah. 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 Nobody knew who Pearl Jam was until that came out.
they were flying under the radar.
You mean Mookie Blaylock?
If you are deep at cut, all John, a fan cut, of, nice. of that 90s, you know, rap and 90s music, you got to listen to the soundtrack. It's so good.
It's so
There's,
good.
There's. Who is it that does Run DMC's on it, but I can't remember who they're with, and they're really good, and it doesn't matter.
All right,
it's
but yeah, it's a great soundtrack. You should check it out, and all the songs are really good. James
Helmet and
House of Pain.
Yeah, that's a badass too.
Which you know, after I don't know, I went back and listened to some House of Pain, and it doesn't. I wouldn't say holds up, but it's not nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be.
No, they were in effect, y'all.
Hells yeah!
I just remember the song they had called "Shit Kickers," and it was literally just "Put on your shit kickers and kick some shit." And I was like, "All right, this is a jam. I'm all right with this."
John, you live in Boston now. You cannot speak ill of the House of Pain.
I don't honestly, it's never come up.
It hasn't come up because you haven't spoken ill of them yet.
Maybe it's because I'm on a country station, or maybe because it's 2019.
No, you speak ill of House of Pain and you will hear.
You know why? Because he made another record after House of Pain.
Yeah, Whitey Ford or whatever. Yeah. That garbage. No, if you do not speak ill of Tom Brady, i.e. Boston Jesus, and you don't speak ill of the Dropkick Murphys, which I would never do because they actually are genuinely
I was going to say, that rule pretty much stands in no matter where you are.
Yeah.
How many friggin' rings? How many friggin' rings has Tom Brady got?
He's got enough. He's got six. How many you got, you fucking hoser? Wait, no, I went the wrong way. I went too far north.
Too far north. Bring it back.
This fucking guy with... Wait, no, I went too far south. Hold on.
Now I'm back in Chicago. Damn
this mooly. Hey, this guy over here with the rings. That was Chicago Bab. All right, James.
I'm going to go with one. It's a movie. I don't know how much play it got. Apparently, when I was going through and looking some stuff up. This one, there's a lowly St. Louis Film Festival, and I think this was a choice among it, and it was, I think, listed by... I can't think of the guy's name. He's the movie reviewer for the Post-Dispatch, but it was like his number one movie of the year. It's a movie called 500 Days of Summer, which I love, with Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yep.
And Zooey Deschanel.
Speaking of G.E. Smith.
Yeah, I remember this movie, yeah.
Yeah, and we're... That's the one.
There you go.
So Joseph Gordon-Levitt is the protagonist, and he's this kind of mopey down in the dumps guy, and he meets this girl at work, and it's Zooey Deschanel, and he kind of crushes on her, and eventually they hook up, and the night after their first hookup, he's just like beaming, and this scene is "You Make My Dreams" by Hall & Oates, and it's just like this idealized version of the world that he's seeing, and like he looks in a car window and sees his reflection. It's Han Solo. It's like it's just a great. It's a fun.
Oh, wow.
It was a really good movie. And honestly, I think two indie darlings of Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Zooey Deschanel, that seems like just a perfect... those two could have been like the... not indie movie, but kind of sub-pop, but above indie movie version of like Meg Ryan and Paul... Or Tom Hanks, I mean. Those two. I don't know why. They just seem like they fit
legs.
Together perfectly.
It had legs.
Yeah,
it
really
made
did. But... It was a great soundtrack. It had Here Comes Your Man by the Pixies, Train in Vain by the Clash.
Oh, two of my favorites.
Had Us by Regina Spektor, and There's a Light That Never Goes Out by the Smiths, which I know I'm a huge fan of the Smiths.
Also, right. please let me get what I want. They leaned a little heavy into the Smiths. It was part of Joseph Gordon-Levitt's mopiness was that he was a big Smiths fan.
Yeah, that's a part of anybody's mopiness. Yeah, you could be the happiest person in the world, then you listen to the Smiths and you go, oh, no. Yeah.
But
it's all over.
It's kind of in that post Garden State soundtrack. It's very kind of like there's some pop stuff. Like there's, you know, you have your indie cred of, you know, Pixies and the Clash, but you have, you have Temper Trap and you have Mumra. You have some other, like, kind of lesser known kind of stuff that.
And I believe
think Garden State was kind of a watershed for indie movie soundtracks.
Well, it also was like, if you want to establish the girl as quirky, make her into indie music. Because in Garden State, she's into the Shins. And then in 500 Days of Summer, she's like, oh, Belle and Sebastian are the best. And I'm like, oh, God.
It's the manic pixie dream girl.
Yes, it is. All right, the next
one. And that's all I really want.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I don't blame the movies. I just blame Manic Pixie
yourself.
Dream Girls for being
hot. You should blame. Next pick is mine, and
yes.
I'm sorry to do this. I always do this way too early in the show, but I'm gonna put the winner out there. It's
Dang.
This. I'm sorry, but I have to. Here we go.
Right. Yes. Thank you.
Okay, hold on.
I thought I timestamped better than that.
Yeah, you didn't. That's okay. Somebody wants. There you go. You got the winner right there. It's Shrek. Come on.
Are you seriously Shrek?
Yes, Shrek. I don't. I will stand by this.
He insisted.
I did.
Even though I pointed out that this song and the video, in fact, is from Mystery Men.
Yeah, it is, but Shrek was a better movie and a better soundtrack. I don't care. I'm saying it right now. I'm not saying
I
Mystery
might
Men
argue
is bad.
With a better movie on that. Have you watched Mystery Men lately?
You might.
Love
I have.
That movie.
And I've watched Shrek as well, and Shrek is a better movie. I'm not saying either one of them is bad, but Shrek had a better soundtrack, too. They had Smash Mouth with All Star. They also had the Hallelujah by Rufus Wainwright, which not as good as the Jeff Buckley, but still good. It had My Beloved Monster by the Eels and Bad Reputation by Joan Jett. I'm just saying.
I love that song.
Yep. There you go. So Shrek goes on there, number six.
Okay.
Rod, your next one.
Wow, Shrek, huh? Okay.
Yep.
Tough act to follow.
It's going
to
win.
It is.
It's going to win, and I'm sorry that people are just going to tune out right now.
Shrek, okay. So my next pick is silly little film that everybody that's ever watched it seems to enjoy called Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Scott Pilgrim.
Have you ever heard
of
this?
Why do you keep
throwing
these ones out that we don't have? Hold on. Yeah, Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Sure.
How could you not have that?
I don't know. Did you coordinate with this with us at all?
No. Why would I do that? First of all, just for the Sex Bomb Bomb songs.
Yes, yeah.
And Frank Black's on it. The Stones are on it. It's a great Beck's on it. It's a great soundtrack.
Here we go.
God, I wish they were a real band. They're actually good.
Yeah.
T-Rex was on it.
On the Edgar Wright front, we probably could have put Baby Driver on here, too.
Oh, shit.
Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and mark that off my list, because I don't have any fucking music pulled for it. That's fine.
All right.
Go ahead.
No, I was
there's
just
like a shared Google document. Like if you want to,
yeah, no, I got it.
Yeah,
I got
he knew.
It.
I told him.
Yeah, but I'm not gonna go. Okay, I have to pick from these.
Well, yeah, but you could have at least let me know what you're gonna pick so I could have the music.
Well, I
ready.
Was looking at it going, wow, I can't believe nobody picked some of my picks.
Oh, for the love of Christ! Okay, so
you know
on
what?
There.
Go ahead.
On there, you had Black Francis. I heard Ramona sing, which is a great song. You had Ramona by Beck, which also is good. Summertime by Bomb Om Bomb, and it's a lot of good songs. Yeah, and Teenage Dream by T-Rex.
Yeah, T-Rex, and there was a Stone song on there. Under My Thumb, I think, is what it was. Yeah, Under My there it is. Under My Thumb. Anyways, it's a good album.
Yeah, and it's a great movie. Like, it kind of was forgotten.
Movie.
And I think it was because people were just sick of Michael Cera at that
God,
point,
where
which
we
was
going?
Unfair.
Yeah, I was.
But I think a lot of people slept on it because they didn't want to see him in another movie. But I thought he was great, and I thought it was a perfect movie. Honestly, Edgar Wright, who directed that movie, as well as the Shaun of the Dead and the Hot Fuzz and End of the World or At World's End.
Cornetto
and
trilogy.
More recently Baby Driver is like flawless as a director. He makes, to me, as far as comedies are concerned, the best movies.
Oh.
Because
Hot Fuzz is one of my all-time favorite movies.
Oh, it's so great. Yeah.
It's so funny. And yeah, Scott Pilgrim is... I watched... made Roman watch it. And he went around for like a month. That's my favorite movie!
So Scott Pilgrim versus the World goes
right,
on the
right
list.
Right now his favorite movie is Step Brothers because I let him watch that.
Oh, yeah? I debated that just because of the Will Ferrell putting his nutsack on the drums.
Oh, but that's the best part!
I feel like I could watch it with him and be like, that's not really his nutsack.
Well, why would it matter?
I don't know. I don't want him to see a grown man's nutsack. Well,
it's
we went to the YMCA one time back in Overland Park, and I don't think he's... he saw a guy with like nuts that you could tie into a triple knotted bow,
yeah,
and I think he was just kind of like, I don't know.
86-year-old man in the YMCA is a little different than, you know.
I don't know. Will Ferrell's balls in that movie look like an old man's balls. I'm just saying. I don't know. You could carbon date him, but
you have to cut him in half and count the rings.
Count the rings, yeah, or just the wrinkles.
So I wasn't going to go with this, but while we're on the subject of artificial genitals, I'm going to go with the Boogie Nights soundtrack.
All right!
That's good. All right. All right, what song from the Boogie Nights soundtrack do you want to highlight?
That's a segue.
That?
There's a lot of options, and I'm really tempted to go with Brand New Key by Melody, because that's when you see Heather Graham get naked. But I'm going to go with a really awesome scene that sticks
it.
With me.
I'm sorry. I'm already playing it. I just have to give it a second.
To picture Heather Graham. It was solid.
Yeah, I mean, she was very solid, yes.
Probably still is. Bless her heart.
I imagine. Yeah, she's pretty good looking.
But I'm gonna go with a very memorable scene with Alfred Molina, where he has his young Asian courtesan.
Uh-huh.
Setting off firecrackers in the background while Mark Wahlberg and John C. Reilly and Thomas Jane are trying to sell him some bunk cocaine.
Oh, yeah.
And he talks about... who was it that was a close personal friend of his? I think it was Jesse's girl. It was Rick Springfield that he was talking about. But they play Sister Christian by Night Ranger, and Alfred Molina is like wearing a bathrobe and underwear, and he gets totally into like
the, yeah, and he's like, wait, chorus.
Of yeah. Sister Christian.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's...
And he's, like, doing this thing with his hands here, where it's building up, and he's like...
Motoring! What's your price for flight?
Sorry, Rod, what?
You know how long I went around asking people, what the hell's motoring? I don't understand what he's saying.
He had back pain. It's Motrin. Yeah, he had back pain.
My mistake.
One of my favorite things on Parks and Rec is I think it was towards the end of the series, they had a big concert and they had the Bobby Knight Rangers, and it was guys dressed up like in red sweaters with throwing chairs and singing Sister Christian. It was pretty great.
That is the greatest thing I've ever heard in my life. How have I not seen that?
It was really good.
A lesser extent than, like, say, you know, your Martin Scorsese's or your Quentin Tarantino's, but Paul Thomas Anderson,
PTA, baby.
The soundtracks, not so much because he's gone into more, like, period pieces kind of lately, but very solid, like, 70s disco era, porn era, because he grew up in L.A., and I guess that was kind of...
Porn.
Well, yeah.
He did porn. That's all he did.
As a young lad. But you got, you know, Best of My Love, Brand New Key, Spill the Wine by Eric Burdon, War, Living Thing by ELO, God Only Knows is in there, You Sexy Thing by Hot Chocolate, which is a hilariously awesome song, Queen of Hearts by Juice Newton, if you guys are interested in Juice Newton, and then Voices Carry by Till Tuesday, which... Yeah. Amy Mann featured fairly heavily on the Magnolia soundtrack, and I don't know if that was related or not.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But he used to date Fiona Apple before he
got... Paul Thomas Anderson?
So sorry for him.
Before he got hooked up with Maya Rudolph.
Oh. That's right. He's married to Maya Rudolph now, isn't he?
Is he the one that's pumped 19 children through her?
Probably.
Three or four, but I don't think they're hurting.
There was a long period.
I think they're providing for them.
Where every time you saw that woman, she was pregnant.
Yeah, that's why she had to quit SNL. Is because they were like, "Look, we can't keep...
How many kids is she having?
Yeah, we can't keep riding around this. Sorry." All right, next one is my pick, and I'm not even going to say what the name of the movie is. I'm just going to play a song from the movie and see if you guys can guess what movie I'm picking.
Behind the Green Door.
Yes, in fact.
Never hear this song the same again after this movie.
Right?
Tonight,
oh, yeah.
Yeah,
we can hear you.
Right. No, I'm talking to
them. I know, it's kidding. I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me. Jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle.
What makes this soundtrack even better is Stephen Wright all over it.
Right.
Listening to K-Billy, Sounds of the 70s.
70s, that was Steeler's Wheel with their Dylan-esque bubblegum pop hit.
Joe Egan
pop
and Jerry Rafferty were a duo known as Steeler's Wheel, and they recorded this Dylan-esque pop bubblegum favorite.
Surprisingly
low number of songs on that. There's a lot of audio cuts from the movie, which made it valuable to me as a teenager. But all of the songs are pitch perfect. They are
They're all
absolutely
great. Little Green Bag, Hooked on a Feeling, I Gotcha by Joe Tex, Stuck in the Middle by Steeler's Wheel, and Coconut by Harry Nilsson.
Which is such an odd end credits song after the mayhem that you've just seen in Reservoir Dogs.
With the lime.
All that blood.
Is that what he did with the ear? He was putting, I mean, I've told you before, the lime and the coconut, that is not literal. Like, that is a metaphor.
But the poison is its own antidote.
Right. No, I don't know what it is. It's about cutting people's ears off and yelling into their ears, I guess. I don't know. To this day, I cannot watch that scene.
You know what's funny, though?
I can't get through it. I cannot. You don't see anything. It bothers me.
But that's just it. It's one of those great, gory
scenes that doesn't show anything.
It's almost like a throwback for, you know, Tarantino for earlier directors, where this horrible thing's going on and the camera slowly turns away to a sign that says, watch your head.
Yeah.
And then it comes back.
Yeah, but it still bothers me. I still have to fast forward through. Especially when he cuts the ear off, but then it's worse because he pours gasoline all over him.
Yeah, when he's standing there holding the ear.
So funny story. I was watching something on YouTube. Not at work. Totally not at work. Not wasting time.
Okay.
not on the city dime. No, sir. And I wound up seeing something, and I was listening to Little Green Bag, and then I saw something about the George Baker selection. And I'd never put it together, but they started talking to George Baker of the George Baker selection. I'm like, holy shit, that guy's Dutch.
Really?
They are a Dutch band. Like, my sister married a guy whose parents are Dutch. He's technically Dutch. He was born in Cameroon. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But yeah. Once you hear a Dutch accent, you will never not hear a Dutch accent when you hear one.
There are many great Dutch acts out there.
This is George Baker selection, by the way.
The slow motion walk at the beginning after the Madonna Dick speech.
Perfect. And nothing beats the Madonna Dick speech. I got Toby Wong in this ear and Madonna's big dick in this ear.
You know, and when that movie came out, too, he couldn't get Miramax eventually distributed, but he had to go around, like, basically asking people to give him money to make the movie. And he had some actors that were interested, but he didn't have funding. And, like, I think a dentist funded most of the movie. Like, he gave him $100,000 to make the movie because nobody thought, like, this is going to work. The movie starts with them talking about Madonna's big dick. it doesn't make
sense. Harvey Keitel coming in gave him a real, real huge boost.
Whoa.
Like, when Harvey Keitel got the script and he's like, I'm in. Like, that was... We're able to generate a lot more revenue.
None of those guys were really... Steve Buscemi. Nobody knew who the hell Steve Buscemi was at that time.
No, not at that time. Michael Madsen had been in every movie with a gun for a while.
I think he had been in Thelma and Louise by that point.
And the Coen brothers knew who Buscemi was.
Yeah, that's...
Yes, they did.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
But I think probably not, for the most part, Quentin's first choice on soundtrack, because he kind of had to go budget, because it was his first movie.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, why they went with the K-Billy Super Sounds of the 70s, because the royalties weren't going to be real high.
Eclectic songs, but that, I think that worked for him. Like, those limitations
it did, and they're all...
Well,
and it
made this cool thing where the guys are all talking about it in the movie, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, have you been listening to K-Billy? Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Rod, your next pick.
You mentioned a song... Hooked on a Feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna go ahead and get Guardians of the Galaxy.
Which one do you want to go with? Which one do you think?
I would assume one is where Uga Chaka is, but I just kind of thought of them as
Uga Chaka, one and volume two.
No, it is. I just didn't know if you wanted to go with if that song defines the movie or.
I have to admit, after seeing the first Guardians of the Galaxy, this song now reminds me of that movie more than others.
That's not yours. That song belongs to me.
And
Blue Swede, Hooked on a Feeling.
And I, Blue Swede. I have to say, the song I think of for part two is Mr. Blue Sky.
Yeah. Well, we're only picking one right now. Yeah.
I don't know. Like I said, it's Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. No, but
they're like the same album.
Yeah, and James Gunn, who made the first two movies, is a great director and has great. And he, I think he, what you realize, I think when you, this is a guy who made a bunch of indie horror movies, and he finally got like a ton of money to make a movie, and he's like, I am going to make the greatest soundtrack of all time. Like, I have so much money. This is so great. I'm gonna put Blue Suede on there. I'm gonna put Bowie on there. I'm gonna put the Jackson 5 on there. I'm gonna put this song in the opening. Which, to me, this defines the movie more than...
Yeah.
Which is where he's dancing on that planet. Oh,
it's such a great scene. And
yeah.
It sets the tone for the movie.
Yeah,
it lets you know what you're getting into.
It sets the tone for the whole movie. You're absolutely right.
There's a note here. I don't care. I'm going to let this play. Because there's this note where he sings it. And it like catches me every time. I can't define the feeling I get from it. Hold on. Here it is. Where his voice cracks there. I don't know what it is about that. Yeah, but it like the fact that they left that in and didn't go back and fix it. I'm like, that. I love that. I love that.
Yeah,
that, I love that
back
song.
To that, it almost sucks.
Yeah, it almost, yeah, it's that thing that we've talked about before where something, my favorite things are things that almost suck, but don't. Like, they go up to the line and go, I see where suck is, and I'm gonna tease suck. But
I like ever, that. I like it when that happens.
Yeah, I like a good old tease suck.
But, yeah. So, again, we had the Blue Suede, we got Go All the Way by Raspberry, Spirit in the Sky, Moon Age Daydream by Bowie, Fooled Around and Fell in Love, I'm Not in Love by 10cc.
Cherry Bomb.
I love that song.
I Want You Back with Little Baby Groot Dancing by Jackson 5 at the end.
Yeah.
Cherry Bomb by The Runaways. Escape.
Who doesn't love that?
The Pina Colada song.
Ooh Child by the Five Stair Steps, too.
With the dance off.
Yeah,
Ronan.
Yeah. Ooh Child.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a song I'd never heard until that movie, and I don't know, I could take it or leave it, but I it fit perfectly in that scene, too.
It got name dropped by the Beastie Boys.
It did. That's right. I forgot.
Always brings me back when they sing Ooh Child.
Right. All right, James, your next one.
Oh, me. That's me.
And we're at number 11, by the way.
11.
Yes, number 11.
Okay. I'm going to go with one that's it's a movie that was the first of several that completely convinced me I should never, ever, 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 ever do heroin. And that is Trainspotting.
I was going to say, I already played Shrek.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Great movie. Incredible cast. The book's really good too. If you
yes, I love the book.
And that would be the quintessential song by Ziggy Pop.
Where it's actually the Iggy Pop. I mean, the song was 20 years old or a little more than that when it came out, and then they went and did a new video for it, and that was all over MTV forever.
Yep.
Yeah. And I remember watching this with, I think it was Chris Carpenter, James. And he was like, is that the Chili Peppers? Because he thought that Iggy Pop was Anthony Kiedis. I might be wrong.
Wow.
It might not have been
heroin.
Him, but I associate any dumbass thing that I heard in my youth. Where
I could see where
pop culture like,
something Pollyanna-ish, and you're like, oh, that's adorable. Chris.
It literally said Iggy Pop when the song came on, and that's obviously not. How old do you think Anthony Kiedis is? This guy's like 60.
I was just thinking there could be an argument. Maybe that's Anthony Kiedis' illegitimate
future
father. Because they do look a lot alike, and neither one of them ever wears shirts.
That's true.
Ever.
It's almost, or it, maybe
Anthony,
it's
Anthony
like Kiedis'
dad
Kiedis
is in the
off.
First Lethal Weapon movie.
Really?
He goes by the name of Blackie Dammit at the very beginning.
What?
At the very beginning.
Okay, I was with you, and then you said that, and I'm like, he's making this shit up. There's no way goes
Blackie
by the name
Dammit.
Blackie Dammit,
and he's a white guy.
And he's a white dude.
Yep. Okay. At the very beginning, there's a situation. There's like a guy being held hostage, and Mel Gibson's there. If you watch the beginning of Lethal Weapon, there's a guy, and you will, when you see him, you'll know that his name is Blackie Dammit, and you'll know that he's Anthony Kiedis' dad.
Wow.
All right, on to my next pick. This is pick number 12.
Wait, gotta rattle off some other things on that soundtrack.
All right,
it wasn't just Iggy Pop.
True.
So you got some Brian Eno. You got a really solid cover of Atomic, a Blondie song by a band called Sleeper.
Yeah.
You got New Order. You got Blur.
Blur. Yeah. Yeah.
Song called Sing off their first record. Perfect Day by Lou Reed, which is great. That was a contender for
Mile End by Pulp.
Pulp's a fun band.
Yeah. Their hits are, I don't know, like I common people, I didn't understand why that was like the biggest song of the 90s.
That's a pretty funny song.
It's a great tune.
It's a great song, but I don't think it's like the best song to come out of Britain in the 90s. That's what everybody treats it like, though. And I love the nightclubbing in that, the Iggy Pop nightclubbing, because it so fits that mood that they're going for, too, where it's just like so gross and like just nasty.
When my wife was in college, she's a drama teacher. So throughout college, she had like tons of, in drama classes and film analysis classes. And anyways, she did an entire semester on Trainspotting.
Really?
And by the time that semester was over, I was like, you mentioned Trainspotting to me one more time and I'm going to go take heroin.
I can't believe she was allowed to teach that.
No, she was taught that.
Yeah. Oh, she was. I'm sorry, I missed it.
She was in college.
Oh, she was in college, and she did a whole thing on...
An entire semester of her film analysis was just that.
There's a lot to dissect in that movie.
I mean, it's really well done, and the guy went on to win the Oscar for... what was it? Slumdog Millionaire. Yeah.
That was a great film.
That was a great movie,
Danny
too,
Boyle's pretty legit.
Danny Boyle's good.
Danny Boyle.
Danny Boyle.
Oh, the pipes. When Slumdog came out and everybody's like, oh, you got to see it, I'm like, I don't want to watch that stupid movie. I finally sat down and watched, like, this is a badass movie.
Yeah, yeah. And it's one of those movies
better than Trainspotting.
Hey.
More palatable to a general audience, I would argue.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, there's not as much shooting up of smack. There's just kids swimming in cesspools of urine and shit.
I couldn't look up at the ceiling for 2 months after I saw that movie because I knew there might be a dead baby up there.
Crawling baby with its head spinning around. Yeah. You'll have that.
All right. Next one. This is pick number
12.
12. And it's mine. And it's this. Constant sorrow.
Them Coen boys.
Who's the guy that plays Delmer, James?
Tim Blake Nelson.
Tim Blake Nelson. He's in the new Watchmen show that I was telling you about.
Is he?
Oh, yeah. He plays this guy. What is it? Glassface?
Looking glass.
He's great, but also, like, it's good that he has the mask on, because every time they've shown him, I've been like, Delmer? Because he's supposed to be, like, this kind of intimidating...
Detective
cop dude, and he is.
Where's your frog?
He plays the guy really, really well.
We thought you was a toad.
We was fornicating.
Do not seek the treasure.
Well, I love that movie.
We was planning on fornicating. But if he didn't have the mask on, I would just find it so hard, because he played Delmer so well, to take him seriously.
Also Buster Scruggs.
That's right. Yeah, he was a Buster Scruggs too, which fits.
Buster Scruggs. Yeah, nobody could have played that part.
If you watch the video on that one for In the Jailhouse Now, it does actually feature him singing.
He actually sings. Oh, wow.
Yep. So if you watch that video, it is very clearly Tim Blake Nelson, and that guy's good.
This soundtrack was so great for when it came
kind
out.
Kind of bluegrass revival. It kind of sparked the thing.
American gothic kind of music. It Big Rock Candy Mountain, You're My Sunshine, Down to the River to Pray, Constant Sorrow, Didn't Leave Nobody But the Baby, and In the Jailhouse Now. I love Didn't Leave Nobody But the Baby.
That whole thing.
Alison Krauss.
Where they're being tempted by corn liquor and women.
Oh. Yeah. Emmylou Harris, Alison Krauss, and Gillian Welch. Liquor. They're singing that song. That is just one of the most beautiful moments in film, but certainly in a Coen Brothers movie. It's just, I could just put that that scene on loop and probably it's like melatonin.
It's great.
Just fall asleep. So
I love that movie, and it was one of those things that like I'd seen the previews for it and I didn't get it, you know. I was like, okay, it looks like a funny movie. And someone told me that's The Odyssey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, what?
The blind guy at the beginning. Like, and
it's The Odyssey, dude. Go watch the movie. And I went and I was like, oh, this is great. Like, it was so kick-ass. You know what I mean? That all through the movie, I was like, obviously, this is The Odyssey. Like, I was just so into it.
They got
John Goodman's the Cyclops.
Everything. Yeah, everything. The sirens, the Cyclops, just on and on. And yeah, I grew up being fascinated with the mythology, you know, Greek mythology and stuff. Yeah. And yeah, it made that movie so exciting for me. Like, it was the reason I wanted to go see
it. God damn it, I'm a Dapper Dan man.
Which is a direct quote from, the Odyssey. It's actually from the Iliad. Few people know that. That's why, that's what launched A Thousand Ships. Everybody thinks it's Helen. No,
he needed Dapper Dan.
He needed Dapper Dan.
Troy was the only place that had it.
In search of Dapper Dan.
That's what, my mom loves that movie, loves that soundtrack, and I don't think, outside of maybe Raising Arizona, I don't think the Coens ever really got in her head too much.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
I don't think mom was watching Fargo or...
Raising Arizona is a great film, too.
Or yeah. No Country for Old Men, or...
It's the last really good movie Nicolas Cage ever did.
Bring Out the Dead was solid.
Bring Out the Dead was good. Matchstick Men was good.
Yeah, but I would argue that any movie he was in could have been better with someone else.
Here's the thing, and I'm not going to disagree with you, but here's the thing about Nicolas Cage is he's only as good as the director of the movie. If he's in a movie with a good director, he's actually usually good. Like, if he has the Coen brothers directing him, he's good. If he's got Martin Scorsese directing him, he's good. If he's got... what's the other one? Ridley Scott directing him, he's good. But you put him in a movie like The Rock, which is a good movie, but Nicolas Cage is terrible in it because Michael Bay is not a great director. So you have him in that.
I'm going to tell you right now, do not watch Con Air.
Oh, same thing. Same thing. Terrible movie, does not hold up at all. I watched The Rock a couple weeks ago with Henry, and we both really liked it, but the whole time I was like, God, it was like, we all think that Nicolas Cage just kind of went downhill quickly. No, he always kind of sucked. He was just really bad.
If you watch, I watched Con Air.
He needs a steady hand at the wheel to be like, Nick.
Yes, Nick, pull it back just a little bit. Jesus.
I watched Con Air a couple of months ago. It was like at a buddy's house, and I was like, are you seriously watching Con Air? And we sat down and watched like the most of the movie. It had already started. And I was like, I forgot this is an hour and a half bad Clint Eastwood impersonation.
It's a really good cast, though.
Yeah, it is.
It was. And
everybody but him.
Malkovich, Steve Buscemi,
Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
John Cusack's in there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
All right. So, Rod,
13 is my pick.
Yep.
We got Reservoir Dogs. Let's go ahead and hit off the old Pulp Fiction.
Ye old Pulp Fiction.
It's a badass with all the surfer music, which I love. All the Dick Dale style surfer music throughout the movie.
Yep.
Yes.
But
that damn, was it? I don't even know who does it. That girl.
Urge Overkill.
Urge Overkill. That is a great cover. Of course you knew it was Urge.
Well, it's also written out in front of me, but.
This is a badass cover.
Yes, it is. It's
really
good.
It really
is. God, I forgot how much the lead singer for Urge Overkill looks like Tom Petty. So I was like, look at it. It's like, wait, it's Tom Petty. Nope, it's not Tom Petty. Or Anthony Kiedis. It was Iggy Pop. Okay. Also on that soundtrack, a Chuck Berry song that I always love a Chuck Berry song that doesn't sound like a Chuck Berry song. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like this one. I mean, a little bit. It was a teenage wedding and the old folks wished
That's right. I forgot about the dance scene. Yeah.
But I was listening the other day. We were listening to Chuck Berry's greatest hits. We're going for a car, a long car ride. And I was listening to Chuck Berry's greatest hits, and every song, it starts off with the B and E string. You slide up from 5 to 11. You go... It's the same goddamn riff at the beginning of, like, five of his songs.
You find what works for you, and you go with it.
Yeah, he didn't have to.
Again, kind of that Quentin Tarantino hallmark of, like, not a ton of songs on the soundtrack, but they all work perfectly. So
all
you got
dropped in exactly Lou, where they need to be.
And that transition where it's Vincent and Jules in the car, and it transitions from Miser Lou to Jungle Boogie because Jules is changing the station. You got Let's Stay Together Jungle by Al Green, Boogie. Son of a Preacher Man by Dusty Springfield, Flowers on the Wall by the Statler Brothers, where Bruce Willis is about to run over Marcellus Wallace. Mm-hmm.
That's right. I forgot about that. I forgot about the Statler Brothers on there.
All right.
It's a great soundtrack, though. And then, like I said, the thing that always got me was all that surfer music and that great cover. And I've never heard that song and not immediately thought of Pulp Fiction.
Okay, James.
So I'm a little torn because I got John Cusack in my head from all the Con Air talk. Mm-hmm. So I have two options here. I have one that's probably more iconic cinematically, mm-hmm. and I have one that's probably a better soundtrack.
I know the one is, I think, one of Jonathan's favorite movies.
Yes, it is. I mean, both of them I like quite a lot, but I'm assuming you're talking about Gross Point Blank.
Yeah. Given the nature of the list, I'm gonna shy away from Say Anything, even though it has the Peter Gabriel
It also had an early Chili Pepper song on it, which was awesome. It had Taste the Pain.
Chili Peppers, Fishbone, like there's like they kind of like Cameron Crowe was a little on point with
but seriously,
Cult of Personality by Living Colour, yeah.
Gross Point Blank for me wasn't just like a watershed moment because it came out when I was like 14 or 15 years old. It was like the first R-rated movie that I snuck into to see. But it also really like changed what I listened to musically because it just here's the song, I think, the standout song on it, the one that came up several times to the point where they actually do. They even have like the Femmes doing a cover of this song on the album. It's called Blister in the Sun 2000, and it's not great. It's not as good as the original, obviously.
Well, if it's 2000, it stands to reason you weren't 14 when this movie came out.
It didn't come out in 2000. They just called it Blister in the Sun 2000.
When did it come out?
This movie came out in 96.
Yeah, it was well before 2000. Doo-doo. When I'm out walking, I strut
my stuff, and I'm so strung out. You weren't 14 in 96.
I stopped to
check you out. You felt 14?
I was 14. I said I was 14 or 15, so I would have been 15.
If you say so.
Oh, okay. I was born on December 1st. You want to do the fucking math? I was born on December 1st, 1981. So in 1996, in the summer of 96, which is, I don't know if you know this, before December of 96,
says who?
I would have been 15.
Says who?
Oh, my God.
children.
Big hands, I know you're the one. But, oh, my God. It had Blister in the Sun by the Femmes. It had The Clash, Rudy Can't Fail, Mirror in the Bathroom by the English Beat, Under Pressure, Bowie and Queen, I Can See Clearly Now by Johnny Nash, We Care a Lot by Faith No More, which I was, when I first heard it, I was like, wait, this band had other songs besides Epic? I had no idea.
And so a different lead singer.
With a different singer, yeah. The Specials with Pressure Job, Let My Love Open the Door, Pete Townsend, Message to You, Rudy by The Specials, Monkey Gone to Heaven, that was my introduction to the Pixies, who I'd heard stuff about from like reading Nirvana biographies, but I was like, oh, okay. Ace of Spades by Motor. I mean, it was such a great soundtrack.
It really was.
Yeah.
Convenience store kids playing Doom on an arcade machine, and they're having the shootout in the convenience mart, and they're playing Ace of Spades.
The only downside to the soundtrack is it does have
the Guns N' Roses cover,
god awful fucking cover of Live and Let Die by Guns N' Roses, which I'm pretty sure was only done that way because they could not afford the rights to the original by Wings. I hope. I hope.
That was on? I didn't know that was on
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it's on there. It's after the convenience store blows up. Ugh.
God, I hate Guns N' Roses.
Me too.
Mostly Axl. I've always said, every, you know, people are like, Axl Rose can sing in five different octaves. You know, it'd be great if one of those octaves didn't suck. It would be really nice.
All right. So Gross Point Blank, that was James's pick. Now back to me, and I'm going to go with, let's see, what do we got? What do we got left? What do we got left? Okay. Oh, this one. Here we go. Here we go. Almost Famous.
Damn it. That was going to be my next one.
Oh, how I feel so real, lying here with no one near, only you. And you can hear me when I say softly, slowly.
Shut the fuck up, time to dance. Oh, I'm sorry.
Count the headlights on the
But obviously, it's a Cameron Crowe movie's going to have a good soundtrack, and this is not an exception. It's got America by Simon and Garfunkel, Sparks by The Who, I've Seen All Good People by Yes, That's the Way by Zeppelin, Tiny Dancer by Elton John. Of course, it has The Wind by Cat Stevens because it came out in the late 90s, right. And it had to. And Something in the Air by Thunderclap.
Does it have Fever Pitch?
Newman.
Fever Dog.
Fever Dog, sorry.
Fever Dog! Scratching my back down.
You know what I do, man? I'm the front man. My job is to get people off. If I see somebody out there that isn't getting off, I look at that guy until he gets off.
Make him get off.
Make him get off. What happened to Jason Lee? I miss Jason Lee.
He got real heavy into Scientology.
Oh, Brody.
Why did
never mind?
Yeah. And
why
then,
did you have to say that?
Like, he does photography now, I think.
Oh, well, good. Forget it.
It was apparently a really good skateboarder once upon a time.
He was a very good skateboarder. I loved it. My name is Earl. Henry and I downloaded all the episodes of that.
Oh my god, that is such a good show.
And we watched it, and Henry was so upset because it doesn't end. It doesn't have like a final because they didn't know they were going to be canceled.
Because, yeah, they thought they were coming back.
And so the final is really sad because it's a really good final, and we were watching it, and he's like, okay, next episode. I was like, buddy, that's it. And it was the first time we've watched an entire show that didn't have like, you know, a sense of completion to it. And he was just like, but that doesn't make any sense. I was like, that's just the way it is, buddy. I'll have you watch Firefly sometime and then you can really feel pain.
don't even go there. Ah.
Okay.
Best series with a solid finale might be a good list someday.
Ooh. Best series that nailed the landing. Or best series finale, really.
Give the whole oeuvre a nod, you know. If it's a shitty show with a really solid final
episode,
happen,
though? They probably
great.
Don't have a good final episode if it's a shitty show. Well, you know, that show was terrible, but the way it ended, I'm going to give that an A.
I don't know. The Big Bang Theory is still going on.
No, it isn't. It just wrapped up.
Oh.
I think.
Thank God that's over.
Yeah. I mean, not that I'm paying attention, but I'm pretty sure I remember last year feeling a sense of relief.
I'm sure they really tied it up with a bow.
Oh, I'm sure it's great. I'm sure those nerds got big banged all over the place. All right, Rod, and this is going to be the last round.
Oh, so we're going to end on 18.
Yep.
Okay. For my last pick, I'm going straight up 90s 100%. With the Singles soundtrack, you had Smashing Pumpkins, you had Soundgarden, a Chris Cornell solo that was good.
Yeah,
you had Pearl Jam. What was it? State of Love and
Trust. State of Love and Trust. I'm just gonna start with that one. God damn it! Hold on.
There.
Other than the the Paul Westerberg crap, the rest of that CD is solid.
It's really good.
It's got Mud a great Jimi Hendrix song you had never heard of.
I enjoy Dyslexic Heart.
Yeah.
No, you don't. Don't lie.
I do. I didn't realize he was the lead singer for The Replacements before that. But.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Yep.
No. The Replacements were this weird band that you can go find a record by The Replacements that is hardcore punk, and then you can go find a record by The Replacements that is, what is that, I'll Be You or whatever?
Yeah.
That you're like, what, how is this the same band?
Right. They did that because I think it was, bands get in that state where they're like, well, we don't want to sound anything like we did before, so let's alienate the audience by doing nothing. You know who had it figured out? AC/DC. That's all I'm going to say. They...
And ZZ Top.
That's, you know, which would
you rather
have?
What you guys like? We'll do that every time. Don't worry.
Yeah, which would you rather have? Like, shitty pizza every single day of your life, or like one really good meal once?
Yeah, I'll go with the shitty pizza.
That is a direct quote almost.
That was
from Bon Scott.
No, that was a direct quote from a drummer that we had in our band one time. He was a drummer. Okay, Rod. He was a drummer, and his favorite drummer was whoever the drummer is for AC/DC. And I was just like,
wait,
I don't even know if he knew the guy's name.
You realize he could be replaced by a drum machine and no one would notice.
In fact, people would be like, wow, they sound a lot better on this album.
That's a drummer who's never once done a
drum
anything other than dip back, dip back, yeah, dip yeah. back. I mean, that's it.
But the single soundtrack, back to that, is really cool because they have Pearl Jam, Alice in Chains, and Chris Cornell, Soundgarden, Mudhoney, Smashing Pumpkins. Other than Wood by Alice in Chains, none of the songs are singles or hits, except for Nearly Lost You by the Screaming Trees, which is
a good song.
It's a great song, but like, who would think that the Screaming Trees, their one hit, would be on this album? It's just interesting. I got it.
There was a Drown by the Pumpkins, which
it's a great song.
That was my first introduction to the Pumpkins. And I went, who are these? I got to hear more of this.
Yeah.
And I ran out and found Gish and was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. Man, that is a great album to not be sober to. I will say that.
But yeah, and the other thing I liked about it is, other than Wood by Alice in Chains, all those big bands, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, none of those songs were on their records.
Yeah, that's true. They were all B-sides.
State of Love and Trust was not on, unless you had some bootleg.
I thought it was on Rearview.
Yeah, but that was kind of like an odds and sods for them, right?
That's true. Yeah, you're right. It was. Yeah, you're right.
Well after the fact, I think.
It was. I think it was they had so many songs built up. That's why like their best song is a B-side. The Yellow Ledbetter was put out as a B-side to Jeremy, and people were like, you know what? That Jeremy song's okay, but god damn, that one song where you can't understand what he's saying at all, that is a great song.
On a Wizard on a Whale?
On a lizard on a whale.
Well, again. And I don't win a sea in the gnome in the mirror. Anyway.
And they don't wave. The Pearl Jam had a song that was like a B-side that almost nobody knew called Dirty Frank. And it was a song they wrote about their bus driver.
Huh.
And it's a badass tune. Badass song. I was like, oh my god, how cool is this? And nobody knows the damn song.
I certainly don't, because I don't know what you're talking about. But
it's called Dirty Frank. Go look it up.
Yeah, I will. All right, James.
Okay, my last choice. I'm going to go with one that I think John is pretty familiar with, too. I think this was... We were at about an age where we first kind of had regular access to cars and relative independence. And this is the first movie I can remember going and seeing multiple times. And it's a Johnny Depp movie, and I know that that's kind of not a hot thing anymore because he beats up girls and spends millions.
He's accused of beating up girls. Actually, a lot of people said she beat him up.
He does spend a lot of money on bracelets. He does spend a lot of money on bracelets.
Okay, I'm so sorry that things keep misfiring here. It is not my fault. Nothing is working right. Anyway, yes, but it's a Blow. I'm assuming, right?
Yep.
Yeah,
Blow.
Great movie. He's great at it as, what was his name? George
Young.
George Young.
True story.
True story. And absolutely fucking heartbreaking too. Like, and he does that so last. Sad. He does that last deal just so he can be with his daughter again. And you, when it happens, he's just like, "Oh yeah, okay, of course, of course." Like, he's not even like sad. He's just like, "Yeah, of course I fucked up. Of course I did that. Of course that happened."
Like, there's like DEA agents that are there. They're like, "It's one of those." Sorry, George. Sorry, George.
Yeah, when you watch the movie, even all the dudes that are setting him up are like looking at each other with tears in their eyes, right. Like. Do we have to do this?
Yeah, he goes away to make a whatever. He goes to the bathroom and they're sitting around going like, "Oh, I can't do this to the guy, man. Oh, I can't do this." And like, "This is the job."
Yeah.
Anyway, the movie start off with the loudest thing any movie's ever started off with, which is the beginning. This.
Oh, what a riff.
And it's great, and it shocks everybody the first time, especially when you see it in theaters, because it's like this very quiet scene where like people are cultivating coca leaves, and it's just very quiet. And I think you hear like birds chirping. Then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, is that riff. And you're like, "Oh God, what?" Okay.
It also, that's so sweet.
Yeah.
It also put Black Betty back on everybody's playlist.
It did, yes, Black Betty.
It after that movie came out, where everybody saunters, put Black Betty back on their playlist. I mean, it
saunters through the airport with,
oh my God,
briefcases full of either cash or cocaine. I don't remember.
Just strutting to the beat of that song, and yeah,
Bam-a-lam.
There might be a list there too. Is like the coolest scene ever. Like, just a scene that defines cool. A suitcase full of cocaine strutting through an airport in front of security guards to Black Betty by Ram Jam.
It was pretty bad.
And I think in an all-white suit.
Yes, right. Well, then you can't see the coke.
Right. It's camouflage. It's Colombian camouflage.
But other songs on that album, that's obviously Can't You Hear Me Knocking by the Stones. Then you have Rumble by Link Wray. You have Strange Brew by Cream, Black Betty by Ram Jam, Blinded by the Light, Keep It Coming by Casey and the Sunshine Band, That Smell, and Can't You See?
Ooh, That Smell.
Oh, I mean, a lot of those are just like, of course, it's a drug movie soundtrack thing. But when Can't You See comes on, and, you know, after his wife had totally just screwed him up, and that comes on, it's just, it's heartbreaking.
Oh, it is. It is. One of my favorite funny things in that movie is he goes to sell cocaine to Bobcat Goldthwait.
Oh,
and,
right.
I can't feel my face.
Like, and he's like, you know, here's the stuff. And he's like, "Well, I'm going to check it out, you know." And he's explaining to him that.
The purity test.
Yeah, that cocaine will melt at this temperature, but the other impurities will melt before that, blah, blah. And so they're sitting there watching the temperature go up, and it's not melting. And Bobcat's like, "Holy crap." And then when it does melt, he goes, "Okay, can I try this?" And he does a line, and he looks at him and goes, I can't feel my face. He's like, "I mean, I can
hold on, I can touch my
face.
Hold on." Yeah, they others did it. I forgot Pee Wee Herman's doing it with him.
Yeah.
What'd I tell you, Derek? It's great. What am I supposed to do with all this? Sell it. Jesus Christ, George. I don't see you in 2 years and you show up at my fucking door with 110 pounds of blow.
Okay, Pee Wee Herman.
110 pounds.
110 pounds.
All right. But it's going to take me a year.
I can't. Feel my face. I mean, I can touch it. But I
can touch
it.
I can't feel it inside. Yeah,
from the inside.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Where did you get this?" He's like, "Columbia."
Yeah.
The director of that is Jonathan Demme, who died. Ted Demme's nephew.
Yeah.
Ted Demme, who did, you know, Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
But Jonathan Demme, like, I think all he'd done was, like, No Cure for Cancer by Dennis Leary.
Yeah, he also did, I don't remember what band it was, but he did No Cure for Cancer, and then a band in the 90s. He hadn't done much, and then he did that movie, and then he died from doing too much blow and having a heart attack on a basketball court with Dennis Leary.
Hey, man, you know, yeah. you like Scruffy says, I'm gonna die like I lived.
With cocaine in my heart.
That's right.
Let me go because this is the last one. The
last pick, John.
Last pick, John. Last pick, John. Last pick.
Last pick, Johnny.
Last pick, Johnny. Last pick. I'm gonna go with this one because I love this movie. Maybe that's more the reason why I'm doing it. But it was also the first time I heard this song. Which is, I'm just following up one Stone song with another one. Full Metal Jacket. Full Metal Jacket is, you know,
great movie.
I don't think Kubrick was known for his soundtrack. I think more for the scores to his movie, but it's a great soundtrack. You got this. Well,
it's at least two different movies, if not three.
Yeah, that's true too. And you really could watch one and then stop watching it after Pyle kills Joker himself. Pyle.
Yeah,
and then the next one is a totally different movie.
Yeah, the minute they leave the island, as they say in the film, and go to to Vietnam. Yeah, the everything about the movie, like the look of the movie, the brightness, and I mean everything about it changes. And yeah, you'd swear you stopped it and put in a different film.
So yeah, that is
same characters, but
yeah, it's a sequel. It's part two.
Surfin' Bird. These Boots Are Made for Walkin'. I Like It Like That. Wooly Bully. Chapel of Love. And Hello Vietnam. When they're at the beginning, getting their head shorn.
These boots. That whole when they use. When that, the prostitute that, comes up and the whole thing,
because that's the delineation point, isn't it? Like, isn't
pretty much,
that where,
yeah.
Like Pyle shoots himself through the head after he kills the drill sergeant,
yeah.
And then the next thing you hear is these boots are made for walking,
right?
And, you have
and
the,
they're sitting there,
Vietnamese,
and the girl comes up, yeah.
And she love you long time,
yeah.
She's sucky,
so
sucky,
horny.
And that's that the sound bite that launched the Two Live Crew.
Of course, of course. But no, it's. It was one of those things where, you know, we were talking earlier, the use of this song in this film kind of changed the way you hear the song. After that, every time I heard the song, I didn't think of Austin Powers or any of that other crap. I giggled to myself thinking of that girl smoking a cigarette going, "Me so horny." And it was just so bad.
What did
it's
you
such
say?
A weird scene.
It's also the where he says, "Hey, half of these chicks are VC and the other half
have the clap."
So, no, not the clap, it's have tuberculosis.
TV. Yeah, TV.
Yeah, so
right.
Only fuck the ones that cough.
Yeah.
Which is not a fun experience. sometimes I'd rather face the razor blade. I'm just saying.
Oh my God.
I don't know if you've ever had it happen to you, but it's not fun.
Okay.
It's just like somebody just white knuckled you.
Yeah. Full Metal Jacket's our last pick.
Full Metal Jacket's our last pick. We have 18, so let me get this together here. Put that one over there. And then
some good ones that didn't get it, but these are all pretty solid.
These are all very good, and I am not upset with any of these. If you are, I don't care. I don't care.
Okay.
Here we go.
Write a letter to your congressman.
I would love to see the letter to the congressman. It's like, so I listened to this podcast, and I don't know.
I disagree with their choices.
Yeah. First of all, it's the weekend before Veterans Day. They didn't do anything for veterans.
How do you make a list like that and not put Forrest Gump on it?
Because I don't like that movie. All right, here we go.
Full Metal Jacket's a war movie.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
There you go.
So is Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Is the war on the Great Depression. Judgment Night versus Shrek.
I'm going to go ahead and say Judgment Night.
I'm going to say Shrek.
That Judgment Night.
You son of a sorry. Bitch. How
Jack,
dare you?
It's not a good soundtrack. It's just All-Star.
It also has bad reputation.
Bad reputation is good, but it's not good enough to beat Judgment Night.
All right, Gross Point Blank versus Singles.
Gross Point Blank.
Yeah, Gross Point Blank.
Gross Point Blank. Mew-shown. American Graffiti versus Rushmore. Best soundtrack.
Damn it. I'm going to say American Graffiti.
I'm going to say Rushmore.
Of course you are.
Sorry.
Yeah. Rushmore.
Rushmore. Goodfellas versus 500 Days of Summer.
What was it? What was the choice again?
Goodfellas versus 500 Days of Summer. I'm going to go with Goodfellas.
Goodfellas.
Yeah.
Goodfellas moves on. Scott Pilgrim versus Boogie Nights.
Boogie Nights.
Scott Pilgrim.
Damn it. I have to say Boogie Nights just because there's more hits. It's a bigger film and a bigger soundtrack.
Reservoir Dogs versus Guardians of the Galaxy. I feel like this is our first major tough one here. I'm going to go with Reservoir Dogs just because just for the stuck in the middle with you. You can't not. I mean, it's not like the song had anything to do with what was happening.
No, but it completely changed the sound of that song.
It completely changed the sound of that song. A song I never heard of before, but it was just so anti, like the tone was just so disturbing because of that song playing.
What do you say, James?
I think overall as a soundtrack, Guardians is a better one.
All right. What do you say, Rod?
I understand.
Damn
John's
it. I got it. I agree though. I think Guardians is
better. Guardians
a better soundtrack.
Moves on. Trainspotting versus Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
I'm gonna say Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Damn. Yeah, I'm gonna agree with you. Pulp Fiction versus Almost Famous, best soundtrack of all time. I'm gonna say Almost Famous.
Yeah, I think Almost Famous hit a little bit better.
All right. Pulp Fiction's out.
Yeah, Pulp Fiction's out. Blow versus Full Metal Jacket.
Blow.
Again, I'm going to go with the better soundtrack, and I think Blow has a better soundtrack.
I am going to agree with you on that one. Rushmore versus Judgment Night.
I'm still going to say Judgment Night, just because it's... Not only is it a bunch of great songs, it's songs you'd never heard. It was this groundbreaking, unusual thing.
Yeah, it was like a project within the movie. Yeah. And I guess you could argue that Rushmore is a really good movie, and the soundtrack is really good too. Whereas Judgment Night is a terrible movie.
It's just a good soundtrack,
and it's just a good soundtrack that makes the soundtrack even better. But I'm still gonna say Rushmore.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Rushmore.
Rushmore, Mijon. Goodfellas versus Gross Point Blank. Ah, that's a tough one.
I'm going to say Goodfellas.
I'm going to say Gross Point Blank. James?
Goodfellas spans longer time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a sucker for a Hitman movie. Gross Point Blank.
Gross Point Blank. Oh, my God. What an upset.
Wow.
Boogie Nights versus Guardians of the Galaxy.
I'm gonna go Guardians.
I'm gonna agree with you. Guardians moves on. Oh Brother versus Almost Famous.
James, what do you think?
I mean, personal taste. I'd probably go with Almost Famous, but. There's something maybe iconoclastic about the Oh Brother Bart. Like it was so out of left field. It was that whole bluegrass thing.
I do know people that would tell you I can't stand that kind of music. They go, okay, I do like that Constant Sorrow song.
That's a great song. Yeah, I'm gonna go with Oh Brother as well.
I would have actually said Gross Point Blank just because off the top of my head I can name more songs.
Well, that wasn't the lineup though.
It was almost famous.
But okay, yeah. So Almost Famous
Rod's
is out.
Against.
Yeah, Almost Famous is out.
Okay.
Blow versus Gross Point Blank.
Blow.
Gross Point Blank.
I have to go with Gross Point Blank too. Okay, so the final four. It's Rushmore. It's my two favorites. Rushmore versus Gross Point Blank. I'm gonna go with Gross Point Blank.
60s or 80s? Like, what's
that's what you're going for. I personally, I like Rushmore more as a movie, but I like the soundtrack for Gross Point Blank more.
I'm actually going to say Rushmore.
You're going to say Rushmore. Okay. Yeah. James?
Didn't you guys both choose Rushmore?
Oh, did we? No, I said Gross Point Blank.
No, you did.
I was just saying I like Rushmore better as a movie, but Gross Point Blank has a better soundtrack.
I'm going to go Gross Point Blank.
Gross Point Blank moves on. Guardians of the Galaxy versus Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Winner of this goes to the final.
James, what do you think?
Guardians. It's just so goddamn catchy. From end to end, it's just...
I was thinking the same thing. Like, I enjoy Oh Brother, but damn it. Guardians is, put it on. It's great. All the way through.
So the final... comes down to... Gross Point Blank versus Guardians of the Galaxy for the best soundtrack of all time. I have a feeling that this is a final that is going to piss off a good majority of the audience.
Yeah.
But I also don't care.
you care a little bit.
I care a lot, which is why I'm going with Gross Point Blank.
Okay, I'm going Guardians.
James?
Do I give Disney the win?
I'm just saying,
After what they did to James Gunn.
I think that the Guardians is bigger songs all the way through, you know, all huge hits, all great stuff. I love the Gross Point Blank soundtrack, but I think Guardians is a better soundtrack.
I prefer Gross Point Blank, but I will concede the point that it does have one big flaw, that god-awful Live and Let Die Guns N' Roses cover. So I'm fine with either one. Either one.
Down to me.
So,
down
to James.
Me. I'm going to piss people off. I'm going to go with my youth. I'm going to go with Gross Point Blank.
Oh, my God! Gross Point Blank is the winner of the best soundtrack of all time.
Wow.
Wow. I think though, it makes sense if you listen to this podcast and you... know what our picks are. That's not too out of character for us. It might be out of character for our listeners, who hopefully will come back next week to hear the next list that we do.
Maybe we don't do a music one next week.
Yeah, let's do a different one. What do you want to do next week?
We've done a lot of music ones lately.
We have way too many.
I don't know. Let's do like something funny.
A funny one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Best joke.
Best joke in a movie. I actually don't... Okay, wait, let me ask you something. Do you think that there's enough instances of somebody telling a joke in a movie? You know what I mean?
I don't know. The first thing I thought of was Breakfast Club, but there's no punchline,
right.
Damn it.
But who cares? It's still a good scene.
It's a great scene. Yeah. It's a great setup. I have literally sat around wasted on many, many drugs with many, many friends... trying to come up with a punchline for that joke for like hours. Never did.
That you have what's her face in Pulp Fiction with the Fox Force
ketchup
5
Thurman.
Ketchup. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe not that. Maybe. I don't know.
How about like, funniest? No, that doesn't work.
No. 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 About the fun. I like when I do this all the time, where I start a sentence hoping that there's an end to it in my mouth and not my mind.
Yeah, but it's not there.
Yeah, it's not there. About the funniest looking person in
a
movie.
I started to say funniest death, but I can't really think of any.
Actually, that's not bad.
Except for the Samuel L. Jackson one
in
shark movie. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's like
Deep Blue.
MacGruber, Val Kilmer's death in MacGruber is pretty hilarious.
Emilio Estevez's death in the first Mission Impossible movie was kind of hilarious.
What?
He got smushed by the elevator.
How is that funny? That's horrible. What is wrong with you?
That's a little bit funny.
Have you ever worked for an elevator company?
Have you ever worked for Emilio Estevez?
No, and I don't.
If
that
had
wasn't...
you either one of those, you would find that scene funny.
Rod and I both speak from experience.
I don't know. I don't remember that scene being played for laughs is all. It disturbs me.
Oh,
that
Macaulay Culkin and My Girl. Hilarious.
Yes. Oh, man.
That is funny.
Yeah. You know what he got in his report card? All B's. Yeah. That's good.
He can't see without his glasses.
He's dead. Why does he need his glasses? Shut up. Go sit down. Idiot. You're stupid. All right. I actually kind of like this. Funniest death.
It's not bad. I think if we
actually sat down and thought about it, we'd easily come up with 16.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's do funniest death in
a
movie.
That's next week. Next week the list is funniest death from a movie. And if you have any suggestions for us, you can put them on the Jonathan Weir Show Facebook page or message us on Patreon or wherever.
And if you have any hate mail for us, you can address that to Jonathan Weir.
No, that's not an email address. My email address is ZA. I'm not going to.
It's a weird email address for you.
Yeah, it is weird. It's almost like it's yours, but I'm not going to give it out because I'm not mean. All right. That's the show. Thanks for listening. Hopefully you come back next week. And it's been a while since I feel like the winner of the list has pissed somebody off. So this might be good for us. Yeah.
We're being divisive.
Yeah. Cody Akins at AkinsPCRepair.com. You, no matter who you are, no matter what your station in life, I'm sure right now are probably having problems with something, whether that's your cell phone or it's your laptop or it's your tablet, whatever it is, there's probably something that is on the fritz, doesn't work as well as it used to. Maybe you have a cell phone that used to keep a great charge, but now the battery sucks. Take it to Cody Akins at Akins PC Repair because he can not only replace the battery, he can change the charging port. Maybe you got, I have on my phone right now, unfortunately, I'm in Boston, so I can't take my phone to Cody, but I totally would. I'm having a problem with my charging port. There's something stuck in the damn thing that I can't get out. And I don't trust anybody but Cody to fix it. So I don't know. Maybe I'm going to have to send it to him, but then I won't have my phone. It's a conundrum. But you, more than likely, are listening to us in Kansas City, and you don't have that problem. Take your phone or tablet or laptop to Cody Akins at AkinsPCRepair.com. I trust him. You should too.